Book 4, Chapter 3, A Sabbath in Capernaum. The Sabbath which followed the calling of the four from their lakeside tasks was a memorable one. It began in the synagogue at Capernaum, where Jesus was invited to speak to the people. The effect upon these eager, warm-hearted Galileans, removed from the disconcerting evidence of his lowly origin and human contacts, was profound. Even in Nazareth, the worshippers had forgotten their prejudice when he spoke to them. They were lost in wonder as they listened to his gracious words which he spoke. So it was in Capernaum. So it was to be throughout Galilee and Judea. To listen to Jesus must have been an experience which could never be forgotten. He spoke with an authority which contrasted unmistakably with that of the scribes. There was a power in his utterance which was denied the most learned scribe. There was a conviction that made all the teaching which they had heard before pale and lifeless. There was more than this. The strong, radiant character of Jesus shone forth in his teaching. As with his works, so with his words. Jesus gave himself, and those that heard and saw felt something that was utterly beautiful and holy. He spoke to them of the love of God and the glory of his kingdom, and told them of the demands it made on all those who responded to his call. As his hearers listened, they must have been elevated far above the constricted limits of their narrow lives. They must have had visions of a beauty and a purpose they had never dreamed of. They must have seen something of the men and women it was possible for them to become. And the vision was given reality as they looked up at the face of the one whose life was uncompromisingly dedicated to God. The evangelist conveys all this in the simple words, "He spake in their synagogue, being glorified of all." The service was suddenly interrupted by the cry of a demented man. The words of grace had been too much for his tortured spirit. His voice rang through the building, "Let us alone! What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee who thou art, the Holy One of God." A deathly silence followed, broken only by the fitful sobs of the exhausted man. Jesus alone remained calm, completely master of the situation. Then, with a deeper note of authority in his voice, was heard, "Hold thy peace, and come out of him." The command penetrated into the confused brain. It produced a terrible conflict, the effects of which the horrified watchers beheld in the writhing, sweating form at their feet. Then, with a final heart-rending cry, it was over. The man lay still. The wildness in his eyes was gone. The demoniac's strength had evaporated. The power of Christ prevailed. If the teaching of Jesus had amazed the people, this supreme mastery over evil spirits awoke in them something that was entirely new. In common with both Greeks and Romans, the Jews accepted the existence of malignant spirits with an almost fatalistic tolerance. They believed that all disease was the result of indwelling demons, and in the case of mental disorders, epileptic fits, and other similar derangements, one can sympathize with the bewilderment which occasioned such a belief. A person so afflicted was accepted philosophically, and few entertained a hope of cure in spite of the spectacular efforts of the exorcists. Jesus had stirred the people to their depths with words which both amazed and charmed them. That he should follow this by bringing sanity and peace to this madman brought forth indescribable emotions. Mark records, "And immediately his fame spread abroad throughout all the region round about Galilee." Jesus left the synagogue with his four disciples and went down to Bethsaida, to the house where Peter lived. Peter was a married man, and his wife and mother-in-law, with his brother Andrew, shared the house by the lake. It was a house which was often to be the abiding place of Jesus in his frequent visits to Capernaum, and we can well imagine with what joy Peter would welcome his illustrious guest. But on this occasion there was no welcome. No meal was prepared for the little company on their return from the synagogue. Peter's wife would not be able to conceal the anxiety which gripped her heart. Her mother had suddenly been stricken down with a burning fever and lay desperately ill. But Jesus was in their midst, and they lost no time in telling him of the misfortune which had so quickly darkened their home. In a moment, the whole scene was transformed. A few minutes before, their master had been looking down at the red, fever-stricken features. Now the bed lay empty, and the stricken woman was busily preparing a meal for them. What a happy repast it would be with their loved one restored. While the little company were rejoicing in their waterside home, things were happening throughout the town of Capernaum and in all the surrounding region. The news of the healing of the demoniac in the synagogue had spread rapidly from house to house. In many dwellings in Capernaum, there was suffering and sorrow, as there is in every age and town. In those houses, the door of hope, locked and barred perhaps for years, slowly opened, as the certainty of the miracle was established by the irrefutable evidence of many eager lips, and the information went round that Jesus was still in their midst, abiding in the house of Peter at Bethsaida. So as the evening shadows brought the Sabbath to its close, the pilgrimage began. Little companies emerged from humble homes all over the town, carrying or leading their pathetic burdens. As they converged upon the fisherman's house, the cries of pain mingled with the shouts of madmen and the appeals of their guardians. The sick were laid on the ground until it was impossible to get near the house. In the graphic language of Mark, all the city was gathered together at the door. At last, hundreds of straining eyes discerned Jesus. He was in their midst with words of comfort and power. Before him lay sick bodies and tortured minds. Behind him was restoration, peace, and new hope. The pilgrimage to the lakeside had been painful and slow. The return was joyful and eager, broken bodies reveling in their newly found freedom, distraught minds delighting in their clear impression and rational thoughts. The superb picture Mark has painted by his phrase, "At even, when the sun did set," presents a canvas which extends far beyond Capernaum and becomes almost symbolic. We are able to see God's anointed upon the earth, standing in the midst of suffering humanity, purging the effects of sin, bringing restoration and gladness. The work done, the last footsteps faded away in the darkened streets. It had been a long, strenuous day for Jesus, and his tired body cried out for rest. But it was more than rest that he needed. We cannot read the records carefully without realizing to some limited extent that Jesus did not take away the suffering without great cost to himself. The very sight of the vast numbers of sick would be a poignant experience to his sensitive mind. The act of healing was a responsive act of giving. To give to so many without intermission would be exhausting, not only to the flesh, but to the spirit. The body was satisfied with a few short hours of repose, but the spirit was not. Rising up a great while before day, he sought the spiritual refreshment that could only be found in the presence of his Father. Long before even the early rising fishermen had stirred, he left the house, and making his way through the deserted streets, found a solitary place among the hills behind the town, and there prayed. Some hours later, the awakening household would notice the empty couch. Outside, there was evidence that the activity of the night before was going to be repeated. In the first light of day, people began to collect around Simon's house and wait for the appearance of the great healer. The disciples, led by Peter, began to look for him. And then, perhaps coming suddenly from behind a rock or breasting a steep path, they saw something they would carry with them to their graves. They stood on holy ground. It would always be a precious and disquieting memory. They saw the Son of God at prayer. It is a scene too sacred to dwell upon. Each devoted heart will contemplate it and draw his own inspiring thoughts. To Peter and his companions, it must have been a revelation of the inner source of their Master's life. And as they watched his gracious ministry in the days that followed, they must have thought again of the prostrate form in the early morning light and realized that his acts of love and power had their source in deep and sacred fellowship with his Father. They must have realized, too, that if this communion was so vital to him, it must be even more necessary for those who lacked his divine heritage and spiritual vision. This surely was the seed which developed in their minds until the opportunity came during one of the sweet moments of heavenly intercourse that they made their request, "Lord, teach us to pray."